supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, maybe I'm romanticizing the past, but retirement seems to me used to be so easy. You finished work, you collected your Social Security, tapped into whatever savings you might have had, and then you went and did whatever you wanted to do. Well, not so anymore. Today, baby boomers by the thousands are redefining what it means to be retired. And that's what we'll talk about on today's shows. Who's leaving their careers and why are they leaving? Who's starting new projects and what resources do they have? Who's been forced out and is ageism real? These are just some of the questions I'll ask my guests, Dick Goldberg and Bo Ballinger. Goldberg's a national director, of the Coming of Age Initiative, and Ballinger is an advisor with AARP. We'll hear from them in just a little bit, but first, let's catch up with someone who's near and dear to so many of us. Leanne Hansen retired in May of this year after being the host of NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday for 25 years. She's now living in Bethany Beach, Delaware. She spends her days contemplating her next move and enjoying coastal living. I asked her to tell me what it was like to end her career at NPR.
It's kind of bittersweet elation. Bittersweet because I really did love what I was doing. Bittersweet because there's a lot of people that I had worked with that I had known for a long time. But elation, I sort of felt my leash was cut. I had given, 25 years to National Public Radio on the national level, and I felt ready to start something new.
Leanne, was there an itch inside of you that hadn't been scratched for 25 years?
I would say the closer I got, I will turn 60 in September. In my mid-50s, there was just an itch to do something and live somewhere else.
Did you have a vision?
My vision was to move here, to Delaware, to the beach. After that, the vision gets a little bit cloudy, but there are things I want to do, for example, like theater, community theater. Mm. I've interviewed people who do theater and write books. Well, now I want to be that person, except, obviously, I don't consider myself Broadway scale. So I was looking in that direction. And I was also, I've put it in a proposal for a book, which wasn't in the cards when I was thinking about it. Where I live right now contributes easily 75% to my happiness.
So you didn't just move to the Delaware shore just for the crab bratwurst?
I didn't know they existed, but boy, when I found them, yes, I would have. I've never found them. They're extraordinary.
It sounds like an oxymoron.
It does. But you figure, it's basically crab meat in a casing. And I've cooked them the way I would Italian sausages or whatever. I made a ragu that I served with pappardelle, and it was delicious.
What time's dinner?
Usually around between 6 and 7.
I'll be there.
All right. I'll leave the screen door porch open for you.
Well, I'll be nearby you. I'm vacationing at the Jersey Shore.
Are you really? Then get on the ferry
yeah,
and keep me.
Yeah.
Come on down.
So you moved from
Washington yeah.
to a small shore town.
Yep.
You left a big footprint to a much smaller one. And at the same time, you and your husband, NPR's Neil Conan, divorced pretty recently.
We won't be officially divorced by the time this airs, but yes, we had the steps in motion.
That's some tremendous change in your life.
I know. I'm doing all three at once, leaving my job, moving, and dissolving a marriage. I mean, yeah, as Will Short said to me, couldn't you just do one at a time?
Yeah. It's almost like taking one of those snow globes and just shaking the hell out of it.
I prefer to think of it as sliding down a mountain and preparing for it, you know, knowing the day I'm going to do it, knowing all three things are going to be happening at once, and trying to juggle not only the emotions, but the paperwork. And the move itself didn't really hit me until all my stuff was finally down here. And yes, there were about 3 days when I looked around at the skyline of cardboard boxes and wondered what the F I had done. But then I just started getting on with it. And honestly, I am at a level of happiness that I just found it difficult to achieve, particularly in the last decade.
Why?
The place. I live near the ocean. It's known to be, you know, scientifically and psychologically beneficial to one's health. The quality of life down here, it's cheaper, for one thing. And I'm not rushing around all the time. I mean, you have to understand that even though I worked Wednesdays through Sundays on Weekend Edition Sunday, the work was pretty much 24/7. Because if I wasn't, I'd finish a show, and there were weeks when I had 4 books to read to do interviews that week. And so I, you know, there was no time. I also had Mondays and Tuesdays as my days off. Nobody else does. Very few people do. My husband didn't, which to a certain extent contributed to our drifting apart. And now I'm on the same cycle as everybody else.
How long had you been thinking about retirement?
Since I was 3.
Really?
I always wanted to live at the ocean. I knew that's where I wanted to end up. Several generations of my family lived on the shore in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. And, you know, as I grew older, I thought, ultimately, I want to live at the beach. It only took me, you know, 57 years to get here.
I've got to tell you a story. You know, I grew up at the shore. I grew up in Margate near Atlantic City.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it was always my dream to, ever since I graduated high school, to at least spend summers down there again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I turned 55, and I said, you know, like the great philosopher, if not now, when?
Well, exactly. I turned 60 in September, and if not now, when? And a lot of disparate parts of the life were coming together. At 59 and a half, I could take what my employer had contributed to my 403B, which is the nonprofit version of the 401K, without penalty. Okay, my contract with NPR ended on the day I turned 59 and a half, and we bought the house in 2004. So we'd been coming down here quite, you know, my weekends. I'd been here in the winter. So I'd had this house, and it was just a matter of, well, what can I do when I'm down there? Because I know that I just can't just sit around. And there are ways for me to get voiceover work by working at home. I'm in the process of getting the equipment I need. The idea of writing a book, as I said, was something new, but I like the idea. And I'm also interested in getting involved in my community. I mean, being a part of Bethany Beach. You know, altruistically, I have extra room in my house, and I've, over the years, had friends come down when they were in a tough part of their life, and this is a very healing place. You can just come and relax.
I watch that in my apartment, too. It's like people walk in, and I hear this big exhale.
Yeah, exactly.
Leanne, do you miss the show? Do you miss the old identity?
Sometimes, but I don't. That was probably the hardest thing, is finding my identity. I mean, my identity as the host of a national program, I didn't have that anymore, although the memory of that exists. And I'm still doing station visits, so there's a part of me that still exists in that world.
Tell us where you get your news these days.
Oh, The Daily Show and The Colbert Report.
Yeah, where else?
I do listen to to Morning Edition. I listen to both weekend editions, Saturday and Sunday. I don't want to miss the puzzle. I would say in terms of radio, I listen to mostly public radio. I buy newspapers. I read the newspaper. The biggest thing for news that I have to keep an eye on, more so, I think, than I did before, is the weather. It can change very quickly here, so I do keep an eye on the weather. I have to say, though, the Sunday papers, I now read all the sections because I have the time.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
In fact, I have my Sunday New York Times crossword puzzle in front of me right now. I used to do it during the show and see how well I could do in the 2 hours of the show, but now it's taken me all week to do it.
isn't that great? You sound very, very happy. I know an awful lot of people whose happiness and well-being increase when they let go of something.
Yeah, and what I was saying before about my identity, who am I if I'm not Neil's wife? Who am I if I'm not the host of Weekend Edition Sunday? And my answer is I'm still Leanne, and I have got stuff going for me.
That was Leanne Hansen. She hosted NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday for 25 years, and she retired in May. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll talk with our guests about the changing face of retirement. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY.
Do you have love, time, or resources to help one child? Bethany Christian Services, a national nonprofit adoption agency, envisions a world where every child has a loving family. Since 1944, Bethany has provided adoption and foster care services, licensed in more than 30 states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. To learn ways to care for vulnerable children in our region and around the world, 800-215-0702 or bethany.org. Bethany Christian Services supports WHYY.
At the heart of everything we do at WHYY is one thing, storytelling. We try to inform, engage, inspire, and connect through deep, colorful stories. And NewsWorks Tonight brings together the best reporting from our network of journalists in one smart, lively regional news magazine. Weeknights at 6 on WHYY-FM, or listen online at WHYY.org and NewsWorks.org. There's also the podcast, and you can follow NewsWorks Tonight on Twitter and Facebook. And that's the story.
And we are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Well, joining us now to talk about the changing face of retirement are Dick Goldberg and Bo Ballinger. Dick is the National Director of the Coming of Age Initiative. Dick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Dan.
And Bo Ballinger is an advisor with AARP. Bo, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. I'm glad to be here.
And our phone number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. If you are of that age or nearing that age and have been thinking about it, give us a call. We'd also like to hear from you if you are retired and whatever that means to you. That's 888-477-9499. You can also email us. We're at voices@whyy.org. Well, Dick, let's start with you. According to Webster, retirement is, quote, the withdrawal from one's position or occupation or from active working life. Do you disagree with Webster?
I think if you're going to talk about traditional retirement, that works, but mostly these days people are exploring lots of different options from the one you just mentioned.
So the face of retirement really has changed dramatically over the last few decades.
I would say it's become multifaceted. It has many faces because people are either not retiring because they need to work and they have a job, or they're looking for another job because they've been let go, or they're exploring the idea of an encore career, doing something in this next stage of life that is very meaningful to them, or they're having a traditional retirement. So those are four different options right there.
Interesting language. I hadn't heard it before. Encore career. Bo, over at AARP, you're seeing a much wider population. Give me a sense of who you are assisting and what kind of questions you're getting from people in their 60s?
Sure, that's a great question, Dan. So, you know, as you may know, AARP is really focused on helping people age 50 and older live their best lives. But our membership does sort of cover that broad range of age. And I think what we've seen over here is a lot of people are really approaching retirement less from that traditional definition of sort of withdrawing from the workforce and more from the fact that they're really having to look at their whole life and what that means. Not just the money, but let's say they're actually taking a step back and sort of defining what retirement means for them. And a lot of people don't even use the word retirement anymore. So that definition is definitely a bit antiquated. But I think, you know, what we see is a lot of folks are either staying in the workforce because they either need to or because they want to. They're not sort of withdrawing from that part of life. They're actually getting more involved in things, whether they're re-careering or reskilling. And they're really sort of defining retirement for themselves.
I've got, Dick, I'm following up on what Bo said. Now, I've got some friends my age, mid-60s, who are holding on to their careers for almost for anxiety about letting go.
Well, I think that's certainly the case with lots of folks because of the current economic situation. And I think that people who need to do that or who feel compelled to do that, you know, that's going to be their activity that they pursue for quite some time. In lieu of the word retirement, we tend to hear more about people talking about transition and transitioning into the next phase of their lives, going from adulthood to, there's a concept out there that parallels encore careers called encore adulthood, the period starting at age 50 to the late 60s. It's really an opportunity to do something in your life that you may not have done before, or that, like Leanne was talking about, that she always wanted to do and now is having the opportunity to pursue. It's really a time to think of what's going to be meaningful to me, what's my life going to be all about, how am I going to find purpose. We do a lot of work at Coming of Age, which is a partnership in Philadelphia of WHYY, the Intergenerational Center at Temple, United Way, and AARP, Pennsylvania, they're one of our founders, to help people figure out what this next part of their lives is going to be, because it really has become a critical issue for a lot of people. Just as Leanne said, you know, who am I now, not now that I'm not whatever it is that you were before?
Well, let's talk about that identity issue. I've counseled many people who become that age or are out of their jobs or their position switched, and that's a critical issue. Who am I now? What am I now? Because you meet somebody, and the first question is, what do you do for a living?
Well, I think the story that I love the most about that is talking with an attorney who was a litigator, and he was contemplating what he was going to do in the next phase of his life, and he said, who am I going to be now that I'm no longer a warrior? He was already thinking about going from being this really tough, aggressive person in the courtroom to what was next. But I think, you know, this is an opportunity to really consider lots of options, to really do some soul searching. We do a program called Explore Your Future, where we work with people in the community, 10, 12, 15 people age 50 plus, and figure out, you know, just what has their life been heretofore? What have been the patterns? And then to glean from that exploration and an identification of what your dreams and passions and values are, what you might do in this next phase of life, what you might do in this next phase of life that would bring you a paycheck as well as also provide purpose. And I think it's really this sense of exploration that people have or can get in touch with at this point in their lives is very empowering.
Yeah, I think there's one other issue with the pace of life going so fast. I think people may have spent a decade or two or more kind of ignoring their dreams or not listening to their dreams. And I often ask clients, what's your dream? And it takes a while to reclaim it, but that's an important question. What's the dream? We're talking with Dick Goldberg and Bo Ballinger, and we're talking about the new face of retirement. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. If you are 50 and older, give us a call. If you've given any thought to retirement, or if you are retired, we'd love to hear from you. You can also reach us by email. We're at voices@whyy.org. Bo, you know, I'm wondering about the younger generation. You know, people in the early end of baby boomers who were like 40 and 45, and they're facing a future where Social Security and Medicare may not exist. And even if it does, it's certainly going to look very different than it does today. I wonder what that does to one's mindset about retirement.
Well, Dan, I think it's a fair question. I think we all sort of realize that in this day and age, we as individuals are a lot more responsible for our sort of setting up what our retirement is going to look like. Of course, we at AARP, you know, fight strongly to protect programs like Medicare and Social Security, and our hope is that they'll be around for all the future generations. But I think, you know, there's some things, you know, I wanted to touch on your conversation about dreams. I think a lot of folks approach retirement with anxiety for both the money issue and you know, sort of leaving the workforce and what that might do to their income, but also the fact that, as you mentioned, they haven't really visualized what their life could look like after they leave the workforce or after they change jobs. I won't even say leave the workforce. And I think something that we've sort of started hearing a lot more of this past year or two is that people, even at the earlier age of the 45, need to start sort of what we call practicing retirement. So that really involves, you know, sitting back and defining and sort of even visualizing what retirement might look like, because it's different for everyone. So we really encourage people to be talking with their loved ones, to sort of take a step back and even journal it out or storyboard it out to see what do I want to be doing in my what's next phase when I'm in retirement, and get that process started that way, because until you do that, you can't really even sort of lay out your goals and your dreams, because if you don't take the time to think about it, it's just not going to be there, and you'll get to the point where retirement is upon you, and you will feel a little bit lost if you haven't taken that time to sort of lay out that plan.
Well, Bo, let me argue with you here. Let's say I am somebody in my mid-40s, and you're telling me to practice retirement. Let me come back at you. Well, here I am in my mid-40s, and I can't contribute to my IRA because I've got college funds I've got to save for. I can't even imagine retirement, and you're telling me to practice it.
No, that's definitely a fair question, Dan. I think when I'm talking about practicing retirement, it doesn't necessarily mean what it traditionally meant. I think it means sort of identifying what's going to be important to you. So for a lot of our folks, we hear, I want to spend more time with my grandkids. I want to make sure that my garden is fully, you know, growing. So it's taking time to actually build those activities into your life, so that you are really starting to make a lifestyle change. And so I'm talking about it more from that angle. And I certainly know people are under financial constraints, especially when it comes to saving for retirement. But since you mentioned it, I will suggest that if folks are sort of having that struggle between saving for their kids' college or for their own retirement, I would really encourage them to focus on their retirement, because there's a lot of other resources out there available to their children to help fund that college savings.
Well,
I'm not sure about that, but I did take away something from what Bo said that I think was very helpful, and that is that we need to be thoughtful about our lives, and whether we're talking about somebody who's in their 40s or 50s or 60s or wherever. And I think the four areas that people really need to be doing some thinking about are four that were identified by Richard Leiter in Minneapolis. He's done a lot of work in this area, and he talks about money, meaning, medicine, and place. And money clearly is something that's fundamental. You've got to be able to put food on the table and have a roof over your head and have the life that you feel comfortable living. Meaning is really what we've been talking about a lot when we talk about dreams. You know, what is it going to be really important to me? The medicine piece is you've got to have your health. I mean, how many people heard as children, you have everything if you have your health? Well, you don't have everything if you have your health, but you really have to have your health. And then the last thing that Dick Leiter talks about is place. And that's the same thing that Leanne was talking about when she was talking about community, a sense of who am I going to be a part of, who's going to be in my life at whatever stage of your life. So I just think thinking about those things and being intentional about making plans is really critical.
Great points. And speaking of medicine and health, Bo, when you talk about practicing retirement, I have to say, I just turned 65, and I think we need to practice for at least 10 or 15 years dealing with Medicare when it happens. I haven't been this confused since I took calculus in college. It's just a nightmare. So practice Medicare.
Can be a very complicated system, and I know. You know, at AARP, we really try to I work in the education and outreach team, and our goal is to really take those issues like Medicare and Social Security and try to put them into plain language that people can actually access and understand. So I'm right there with you. I think there's a lot of challenges with some of the systems that we have, but, you know, we do have some resources. If people are looking particularly at Medicare and they go to aarp.org/Medicare, we have a great booklet that tries to walk people through that process.
Well, we go off the air at 12:59. I'll be calling you about 1:01.
And I'll be there at 1:02. I understand the complexity of that issue too.
Let's go right to the phones. We got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. We'll start with Bruce. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air.
Hi, Dan. I want to give you a little background. I'm in my 80s and retired, and helped develop an educational program within my profession to teach people early preparation for retirement. One of the keys we used was the fact that too many people plan to retire from something. What's critical is really retiring to something.
I think that's a great point, Dick.
I could love to pick up on that point, because just as Bo was talking about the resources that AARP has for helping people with Medicare, if people go to the Coming of Age website, which is comingofage.org, we have a whole section about helping people figure out what they're going to do, how they're going to take their next steps, what's next, how to explore their future. We've actually put together a book that's free online called The Age for Change, which means exactly what Bruce was talking about. What am I changing to? Who am I becoming? And all the issues that you want to consider and talk about with friends and spouses and what have you.
It's a wonderful point. Bruce, thanks so much for bringing that up and calling in. Let's continue with the phones. We've got Karen.
Anticipate was an interest in spiritual things, and that has taken up a lot of my time valuably.
That's great. Yeah, we need to talk about that also. We'll get to that a little later in the show, is the spiritual issues that come up. We've got Karen now on the line. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hello. I retired last summer, a little bit early, and I fulfilled a dream, which was wonderful, which I went over to live and study and teach in Russia for 3 months, which was a lifelong dream, and I'm planning to go back. But that's not why I called. As I explained to the lady who answered, I'd like you to address all the people who are not retired voluntarily, and who find themselves sometimes in their 50s or early 60s. Most people don't have beach houses and things like that to look forward to.
Right.
And many people are in very dire straits, and they can't get employed. And also the conversation about raising the Social Security eligibility age seems to ignore all those people who are involuntarily retired, laid off, and perhaps someday won't qualify for Social Security for another year or two down the road. And nobody's talking about what happens to all those people.
I think you're raising a great point. And actually, before I turn to Dick Goldberg, that's the population I'd like to hear from. If you are feel you've been forced into retirement and don't have the resources to retire, please give us a call, 888-477-9499. But, Dick, I'd like to hear you respond to Karen's point.
Well, I think, you know, it's obviously a very real and pressing issue for way too many people, that they find themselves at this time of their lives not where they expected to be with regard to finances. We generally help people by identifying some resources in their local community, and since Coming of Age is a national initiative, we send people to the local resource where we have a Coming of Age initiative, like in San Francisco or Kansas City or New York or Philadelphia. One of the major resources that we direct people toward is the Jewish Vocational Services, JVS, which is very helpful in getting people to understand what they need to do to look for work, how to present themselves, how to be more au courant in the way they approach a job search. And I think probably toss this one to Bo as well, because AARP has some resources for people
to
find themselves.
Bo? Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Dick. Yeah, we know, unfortunately, this is a reality for a lot of older Americans today. The recession of the last few years has been really just devastating on a lot of folks, because it impacts more than just them having to leave the workforce sort of against their will, if you will. You know, there's a lot of ripple effect that sort of happens from this. But I think if folks can sort of try to visualize, you know, what their skill sets are, getting back into the job market as older Americans can be very difficult. But I think one step that you can take is to make sure that you're actually repackaging all your skills so that potential employers know not just that you have a lot of experience in the workforce, but sort of what that means and what that looks like. On our website, we have aarp.org/jobs, where we partner with Indeed.com to actually highlight jobs that are more friendly and open to older workers. It's a great place to start to sort of look for options, but I think there's also some sort of local connections you can make as well. I think if you're sort of participating in your local senior centers and really networking, that's one thing we've noticed with a lot of our members is they're being active in social networking, they're being active in in-person networking, and it's sort of stepping back and looking at how you entered the workforce in the first place. A lot of times it's about who you know. So that's something that people should definitely be trying to do in their time, is building up those even social networks, because it can lead to professional opportunities.
I think a major issue here is timing. And what we have seen with a lot of older workers is they are sort of stymied by the fact that they are no longer working and don't know, you know, where to turn, what to do. And sort of there's sometimes an extended period of bewilderment or confusion, rather than immediately going in to explore what opportunities are out there, what kinds of re-careering opportunities there are, looking at the local community college to see what kind of support they're offering. So given the circumstances that many people find themselves in because of the economy, there really is no time like the very present to really initiate this effort.
Well, we've got to take a short break, and when we come back, we've got a lot of callers, and we're going to continue to explore the changing face of retirement. And Dick, I want to put you on alert. I'm going to ask you some questions about your retirement, and maybe you can give me some ideas about mine. We're talking about the many faces of retirement. My guests are Dick Goldberg and Bo Ballinger. Ballinger is an advisor to AARP down in Washington. Dick Goldberg's national director of the Coming of Age Initiative. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art supports WHYY, presenting Rembrandt and the Face of Jesus, the first exhibition in Philadelphia ever to include the rare painting, prints, and portraits of Rembrandt, the great painter of the Dutch Golden Age. Rembrandt and the Face of Jesus reassembles a group of more than 50 intimate portraits of Christ that have not been seen together since they left the artist's home in Amsterdam more than 350 years ago, on view through October 30th only. More information at philamuseum.org.
Once, I knew how to look for you. For me, as a songwriter, was the best thing I could have gotten. You're struggling away, you're doing your thing, and so the opportunity to write a bunch of songs for a film, it's a great gig to get, if you like.
I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. And this week on Sound Opinions, we're joined by musicians and now movie stars, Glenn Hansard and Marketa Erglova of the film Once.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about the many faces of aging with Dick Goldberg and Bo Ballinger. And let's go right to the phones. We've got Sandy on the line.
Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I love the issues that you talk about are so needed, and you always have so much information. And I happen to be a person that's in my late 50s who kind of was pushed out of the job market. You know, I was a single mother for years. That, you know, my job basically, you know, depended on my youth and being a woman and being somewhat attractive. I mean, I was in the hospitality business. And, you know, the laws say they protect you. But let's face it, you know, when you get to a certain age when there's somebody younger, you know, it happens to men also. I cannot say it's only women. However, you know, because I worked all my life to make money, my passions were never followed. I didn't even know what they were. I didn't have time to think about it. But I do have passions. I'm an animal lover, and I wish I could spend my time volunteering. But, you know, unfortunately, I need to make money in the last parts of my life so that I can sustain my life, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to live a long life.
And are you able to, Sandy?
Well, I have some health issues, but I'm trying to get better, and, you know, I think that I could, but, you know, I can't do the... I'm physically limited to the things I used to do when I was young. I mean, my stamina isn't what it used to be, you know.
Are you looking for employment?
Well, I have looked. I have looked, and unfortunately, I have not been able to find anything, and it's very... You know, it's disillusioning, and it's in... basically in jobs that don't pay that much either, you know. But I was willing to take anything. But now I have nothing. I have no employment, and I have no job, and I have nothing. You know, of course, what I want to do is volunteer, but then that doesn't feed me or, right. You know.
But I think volunteering, particularly given your involvement with animals, say at an SPCA or some other animal shelter, could eventually lead, I mean, I can't promise this by any means, but could eventually lead to an employment opportunity for you. And I think if you demonstrate at an organization that you really have skill and ability, when an opening occurs, you're going to be the first person they think of. So well, I think that's one thing to think about in this very specific situation.
Well, Dick, let me challenge you on Sandy's behalf that... Maybe if I'm Sandy, I can't afford to take that risk. I could wind up volunteering for a year and get nothing.
Well, I don't know that you would want to do it for that long a period of time and not feel that there was an opportunity at the other end of the of your working there.
So what other options does Sandy have?
With respect to her particular interest, I don't know. I don't think that there necessarily are others for people who... want to pursue that kind of involvement. But if she looks at her other skills based on the work that she's had in the hospitality industry and her other abilities that she's cultivated, if she's in her 50s or 60s, she has to have amassed quite a bit of experience and facility at doing various things and begin to do a job search that, you know, focuses on making use of those abilities that she has.
And
so I think there's several things you can. You know, it's not just one thing. You know, just go volunteer at an animal shelter for a year and hope that that's the panacea. So I'm just looking at several different options.
And I like, you know, when you say look at skills. Now you're not just talking about looking for hospitality jobs. You're looking at all the elements that one must have to be in the hospitality business. You've got to be personable, engaging, and I'll bet a dozen other skills in order to make that work.
Plus many other things, I should say.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Ruth on the line. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. First of all, let me just tell you, I love your show. And I would love for the guests to address the issue of ageism, real ageism.
Why?
I'm one of these people. Well, I had a decent career as a professional. I was an attorney and decided to go for the meaning. Left my position after almost 20 years of practice in-house and went to seminary and was ordained. I graduated seminary in my mid-50s. I'm now approaching 60, and have found the job search to be incredibly frustrating, with people even saying to me, you know, when you're taking a position in a religious organization, especially, well, you know, we already have one leader your age. We don't need to. We're looking for someone much younger. And I have encountered this over and over again. I am presently employed. I do have a wonderful community that I serve. I'm looking at the expiry of a contract and now in the process of trying to find another position because the community is facing economic hardship. In any event, that's not the issue. The issue is I have been personally been told to my face, you're just too old for this job. And I have lots of friends to whom that's happened as well. So I was hoping and this is not an issue of retooling. It's not an issue of lack of skills. It's not, you know, it's bald-faced ageism. And I was hoping that your guests or you might have some wisdom.
Yeah, I would like to have all of us tackle that because I want to take a look at it from micro and macro. This is a major issue. So micro is what can Ruth and the hundreds of thousands of people like her do when facing ageism? And the other thing is what can we do as a culture? You know, we all know what an aging population, what gifts, what wisdom and understanding an aging population brings to the workforce. But why hasn't our culture woken up to that? So let me start with you, Bo, about, you know, what can an individual do when they're facing ageism?
That's a great question, Dan. Unfortunately, we know that this issue does exist. Ruth is a perfect example of how this may have impacted an individual. And, you know, I think if an individual has legitimately been told or denied something because of their age, you know, you can actually file a report with the state attorney general's office. I think the difficult part is sort of proving that, which is unfortunate. But that is a resource for folks who are in that situation who have been discriminated because of age. You know, unfortunately, we saw it with last week's job statistics that, you know, older workers, they endure unemployment for more than a year on average, which is a lot longer than younger workers. And unfortunately, they don't have the gift of time to sort of make that up. So I think, you know, the best sort of guidance I can give is for an individual to really, you know, try to find a place in the community where their experience is really valued. And, you know, luckily for Ruth, she was able to find employment. It doesn't sound like it was an easy journey at all, but I think, you know, I talk with a lot of employers in our outreach here, and there are a lot out there who at least say that they want to keep older workers on board. They value the experience. They see the value of having multiple generations working in the workplace. So, you know, I would just encourage people not to give up. I know it can get frustrating, but there are organizations out there that do value your experience.
Oh, is that part of your responsibility, not you, Bo, but AARP, to teach people about what we bring?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, AARP has been committed to what we call sort of workforce issues that sort of takes the range of everything from helping individuals sort of re-career and driving them to potential employers with that AARP.org/jobs area, potential employers that are good to older workers. So yes, I think we see it as an issue that needs to be addressed, and we do try to provide resources for both individuals and encourage employers to hire older workers.
Dick, do you want to weigh in on what an individual can do when they're facing ageism?
Absolutely. I'd like to respond to both the micro dimension and the macro dimension that you introduced. First of all, I think Bo is absolutely correct that if you are told directly to your face that we're not hiring you because you're older, it's like being told we're not hiring you because you're black or we're not hiring you because you're a woman. And those are, to my understanding, actionable. You have a case. That's illegal. Older adults, in fact, are a protected class. And I'm probably getting too far out on a legal limb here, and I'm married to an employment attorney who tells me I shouldn't talk about these things to the extent that I do. But that is my understanding, and I think that you can either go to the Attorney General or the EEOC or to an attorney and see if you can get some resolution on that. But I think it's not just AARP's responsibility or coming of age's responsibility to address ageism. It's a pervasive bigotry in our country, and it's the one that is tolerated the most. If on television you hear an ageist comment about how older people don't remember things as well or their bodies don't function as well, it's a joke and people laugh. You don't hear those kinds of comments or the comparable stigma that people associate or have associated with African American or Jews or gays or women, or those are forbidden topics, as well they should be. But for some reason, the culture seems to tolerate both our comments about older people and also what I consider infantilizing younger people. You know, saying some kid who's in his 20s, oh, I just did it, didn't I? I said some kid in his 20s. Nobody's a kid in their 20s. They're an adult in their 20s, and so you don't want to say those kinds of things because it just perpetuates this notion that there's certain characteristics that we associate with particular ages.
So let's get to micro. What can I do? What can Ruth do if it's not actionable? How can we teach the person whose face we're looking at? How can we teach them what we bring to the workforce that they don't have already?
Well, I think the use of the word teach is right on the money, Dan, because it's a teachable moment. And just like we have referred to teachable moments in the way we interact with children, I think when there are teachable moments to the way we interact with others. And to say, do you realize what you've just said, that you've discounted me because I have gray hair or because I have a lot of experience and that seems not to be relevant? So I think really calling people on it, it's awkward. I do it all the time, so I've gotten used to it. But I really think that's an important piece on the micro level of how we address the macro problem of pervasive ageism.
Let's see if we can get another caller on. We've got Ted on the line. Hi, Ted. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Dan.
Yes.
I'm happily retired at the moment. I am bicycling around Fairmont Park, so I'm talking to you on my cell phone. One of the things I get to do and started a whole second career, but I wanted to talk about America's first great baby boomer, who is our own Benjamin Franklin, who retired at the age of 42, which was unheard of, decided he had enough money and didn't trust people who spent their whole lives just getting as much money as they could accrue. And he, of course, went on to do all sorts of wonderful things, including becoming our most successful diplomat in Paris. But one of the things he discovered that is that he was a very sociable man. and that sociableness really helped him enjoy his later years. Hmm. He was engaged with a lot of people. He fell in love a number of times when he was in his 60s and 70s. Even said, I'm having so much fun in Paris, I'm now 70, and he'd fallen in love for the second time, but he said, you may now call me 64.
Isn't that...
Because I'm getting younger all the time, and I think he's a great model.
What a great story. Thanks for the call, Ted. And listen, don't talk on the cell phone when you ride your bike, for goodness sake. Goodness, thanks for the call. I've got to ask you a quick question that might take a long answer, but just quickly. Dick, are you thinking about retirement?
I'm thinking about it in the terms that Bo identified before, which is, you know, really to try to be thoughtful about it. And what got me started was an exercise in the Explore Your Future workshop series that Coming of Age offers, where we put people through a guided imagery of what their ideal life would be like. I had never done anything like that, and I went through that experience and came to one conclusion about my retirement, which is I want it to be in Philadelphia. Mm. And I just had no idea that that's what I wanted to do. And so that's given me a stake in the ground and about which I'm, you know, contemplating other dimensions.
That's wonderful. Well, as I contemplate my retirement, I want to do everything that I'm doing now, I just maybe a little less and maybe a little more travel. So, you know, what a blessing when we can say we are happy with what we are doing right now. I want to thank you both so much for joining us today. It was really an important and informative show. Dick Goldberg's National Director of the Coming of Age Initiative. Thanks, Dick.
Great being with you, Dan.
And Bo Ballinger is an advisor for AARP in Washington, D.C. I'm calling you at 101
about
that
good,
Medicare stuff. Take care and thank you. Earlier on the show, we heard from Leanne Hansen, retired host of Weekend Edition Sunday on NPR. Hey, next week, we're going to be talking about the therapeutic effects of pets, and there's some new research out that's showing mixed results. Well, if you want to reach us, we're at voices@whyy.org, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. For archived editions of the show, you can visit our website, whyy.org/voices, or on iTunes. We are podcast. The engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Our intern is Emily Haas. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. And me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, the host. Enjoy your week, my friends.